This week, my daughter has been sitting her GCSE mock exams. It has been an interesting week watching the approach that she's taken to revision, or not, depending on how you might look at it. So for her favourite subject, which is English, she has done loads of work. She's made notes, she's made flashcards, she's done practice questions, she's watched special online tutorials, she's reminded herself of the set texts by watching a film adaptation, and I think she was actually looking forward to the exam because she loves English and she wanted to show her teacher how much she's learned and how much the subject means to her. On the other hand, then there was physics, which she has spent the last few weeks sort of avoiding as far as she possibly can. Then it's come to the night before and she's done loads of last minute cramming, which seemed, as far as I could tell, to involve just sort of flicking through the book whilst watching The Crown on Netflix on her iPad. Such is her disregard for physics. I don't know about you, but there have been times in my life where I've definitely felt prepared and ready for exams. And actually, I think there have been times where I've thought, I want to show you what I know. And then I have also had those times, like physics, which is probably true for me too, where I've sort of wanted to avoid it and I've left it to the last minute. The same is occasionally true on sermon writing as well. Now, if you know the date on which an exam will happen, you can actually leave it to the last minute because you know when it's going to be, so you can put it off and you can put it off, and then if you're quite good at last minute cramming, you can sort of shove it all in and get it all in your brain just in time for the exam. But if you didn't know the exam, if you were just told that, hey, sometime in the next couple of months, we're going to ask you to take this exam, well, you'd have to be ready at any point. You'd have to be ready to go constantly and know your subject. As I said at the start, today is Advent Sunday, the beginning of the church's season, the church's year and of this season of Advent. And we look back to the coming of Christ at Christmas. We think about Christ coming into our lives here and now. And we look forward to the second coming of Christ, when he will return to judge the world and to set right all that is wrong. And the message of Advent is that we should be ready. We don't know the date on which Christ will return, so we should be ready all the time, any time. And that reading that we heard from Matthew a few minutes ago is one of the set readings for Advent, and it tells us to keep watch because you do not know on what day your Lord will come. But funnily enough, when Jesus first spoke these words to his disciples, it's unlikely that he was actually talking about the second coming. Now, one of the underlying themes of chapter 24 is the role of the temple in Jewish life and worship. So for the Jews, the temple was the centre of their life and faith. It was the place where they went to find God. God was present in the temple. And when the Jews thought about God's plans and purposes for the world, the temple was always at the heart of what God would do. Jesus, on the other hand, basically came along and said, it's not about the building, it's about me. I am the centre of life and faith. I am the fulfilment of God's plans and purposes for the world. God is present in me because I am God. And so, in effect, Jesus is sort of setting himself up in a competition to the temple by saying that he is the new temple. So right at the start of chapter 24, if you've got a Bible open, if you flick back to the previous page, you find the disciples asking Jesus, when is your true identity going to be revealed? You've told us all this stuff that it's not the temple, it's about you, but when will everybody else see that? Now, we know with the benefit of hindsight that Jesus' true identity is revealed through the resurrection, through the crucifixion, the resurrection, and then the ascension. But the answer that Jesus gives here to this very specific question about him being the replacement of the temple is that he will be proved right when the temple is destroyed. So when the temple is raised to the ground, then everybody will see that Jesus is the Lord. So what we are actually reading in chapter 24, and this is where you've got to be really careful with the Bible, sometimes you can't just sort of take it at its superficial level, is it likely that this is a prophecy about an actual historical event. And history tells us that the temple was indeed destroyed in AD 70. It was destroyed after a four-year siege by the Romans on Jerusalem. The temple was reduced to rubble, and 1 million Jews died in the attack in that four-year siege. There's a lot of apocalyptic language in this passage, and sometimes people get completely fixated on the apocalyptic language and they take it to be a prediction of the end of the world. Well, I'm saying, actually, no, I think this is a prediction about an actual historical event that has happened. However, we do still need to look at the overarching message, because there is a sort of bigger picture in these chapters. And the message from Jesus seems to be that the disciples will go through difficult and testing times. That's because in their case, war is going to break out. He's saying to them, you know, one day life will be normal, you'll be going on as you usually do, but then the next day, tragedy will strike. You will doubt that I am Lord, he's saying. You're going to doubt that Jesus is Lord because of all the things that are happening. But he's saying you can trust him because he will return to set right all that is wrong in the world. Now, I find it fascinating that just days later, in Matthew chapter 26, we see Jesus and the disciples in the Garden of Gethsemane. And Jesus, who has just warned his disciples, you know, you will go through testing times if you follow me, he is now being tested himself because he's preparing for his own death. And he says to his disciples, my soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me. Keep watch. That Advent phrase. Here it is, the night before Jesus dies. He then returns to find that his disciples are sleeping. They've fallen asleep on the job. It's a bit like my daughter lying in bed watching Netflix when she should be doing revision. So what do we do with this quite unusual passage that seems to be about this historical event but also has this overarching message? How do we apply it to our lives? Well, I think the overarching message of these two chapters applies to us today. And the message is that as Christians, it is very likely that we will go through times that test our faith. Now, I don't believe that they're tests that are sent by God. I don't think God works like that. I think it just means that difficult things are part of life, and those difficult things will test our faith. One day, everything could be normal, and yet the next day, it could feel as if tragedy has struck. There will be times for us where we think, is God really there? Is God really in control? But the message here is that we can trust Jesus. We may not get it all, we may not be able to grasp the bigger picture, but he's saying, you know, one day I will put right all of these things that are wrong and that are broken. So it's a bit like my opening example of the exam. You know, we could be tested at any time, so we need to be ready for it. We need to be aware that it might happen. So how do we do that? How do we cope when testing times come along and we're struggling in our faith? Well, I wonder if, again, we need to look at the example of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, because Jesus knows that he is about to die, and he is suffering, so much so that he even says to God, my Father, if it is possible, take this cup from me, yet not my will, but as you will. So what does Jesus do in his time of testing and his time of suffering? He does two things. He seeks solace with God, and he seeks solidarity from his disciples. So he seeks solace with God by just taking himself slightly apart from his friends. He throws himself on God, he throws himself onto the floor, and he tells God how he is feeling with searing honesty. And yet he also says to God that he still trusts God. He says, yet not as I will, but as you will. So there's something there about being honest with God about how it feels to be tested, but also taking the risk of saying, I don't get it, I am confused, but I trust you. And as well as seeking solace with God, he seeks solidarity from his disciples. It is as simple as the fact that he says to them, my soul is overwhelmed with sorrow, please will you stay with me? It's so, so human. I love it. He's just saying, don't leave me alone. Stay with me. And there's something there for us, I think, about perhaps when we are having hard times, that we can do as Jesus does and take that risk of telling others what is happening in our lives, entrusting ourselves to them so they understand how we're feeling. So as Christians, we will go through testing times. And the way that perhaps we can cope with them is seeking solace with God and solidarity with other people. But this passage is also set for Advent Sunday. So we're also being asked to read it through the lens of the second coming. How do we make sense of this if we're thinking about Christ's return? Well, the other message that seems to be in this passage is that Jesus will return to judge the world and to establish his justice. And what that means is that Jesus, the judge, will examine our lives when he returns. And we need to be ready for that as well. So there's two aspects there. The idea of being tested in our faith, and then the idea of being examined in our faith. For some people, exams are perhaps a rather negative example, because for some people we associate exams with fear, or possibly with failure, or with a sense of worry. And I think the same is true when we talk about Jesus as judge. It's not a very comfortable image, because I guess it makes us perhaps feel fearful of God, or it makes us worry that we might somehow fail. Now, I don't take the idea of judgment lightly, but nor is it something I am afraid of. Because for me, I believe that Jesus exercises his judgment with generosity and with love. So much so that I feel confident entrusting myself to him. Not because I am particularly good, I'm not, but because I am confident in the goodness of Jesus. And it got me thinking the last couple of days, you know, maybe when Jesus returns, he is returning to catch us doing something good. We all get kind of worried that Jesus is looking to catch us out doing something wrong, but maybe it's just the opposite. Because think of all those times when you are doing the right thing and nobody sees it. Think of the times when perhaps you do something selfless, when you go the extra mile, when you're kind, when you do a really rubbishy job and nobody even notices or thanks you. All of those times when you have an ethical dilemma and you choose to do the right thing but nobody sees it. All of those times when you're talking to someone and they're driving you mad but you behave with patience and grace. I think that when Jesus is coming back, he is coming back to expose all of that. Jesus is not the kind of Lord who wants to shame us by exposing the things that we're ashamed of. He wants to expose all of that goodness. Shine a light on all that is good and beautiful and right in our fellow humans. So for me, Jesus is the kind of examiner who says, let me tell you everything that you got right, rather than saying, let me show you where all the big red crosses are. Why do I think that's true? Why do I think that's the case, that Jesus is the kind of judge who wants to tell you what you got right? It's because the disciples fall asleep when Jesus needs them most. So they abandon him in his hour of need, and then not just 24 hours later, they deny even knowing him. And yet Jesus chooses these same people to be the people who lead and found his church. That's how he looks at them. So they fail him in their hour of need, and yet he understands all the good that they're capable of. My daughter has left her physics revision to the last minute, but you know what? She was really ready for her English exam, and I hope she gets the mark that she deserves for her hard work. None of us know what is round the corner. None of us know what tomorrow will bring, or next week, or next month, or next year. But Advent is a season where we're invited to sort of wake up and smell the coffee. We're invited to be real about what it's like to be a Christian, to recognise we might be tested, and then to be ready for those things, to have deep faith that is ready to take on all that comes our way. Amen.